Good evening, everyone. This is Chuck, K0HORK, and welcome to the Bakken Amateur Radio Society Fusion Radio Net. This net operates on the Minnesota-Wisconsin room number 21493. It is an open technical net, but please check in through net control. Tonight's net control stations are K0HORK, Chuck, K9EQ, Chris, Whiskey 4, India, Oscar, Delta, and, well, hopefully somebody else will show up. Maybe N0YQ, Steve. You know how it is with vacation times. The Bakken Amateur Radio Society takes its name from Earl Bakken, who is the founder of Medtronic. Earl was always interested in radio and is a founding sponsor of the Pavic Museum of Broadcasting. Earl allows us to use his name because he's a strong supporter of learning, experimentation, and helping others. You can learn more about Bars and Earl at www.w0mdt.com. The 444.075 and the 444.525 operate from the Medtronic facility near Highway 10 and I-35W in Moundsview, Minnesota. Please remember that there is a chat window available at hamoperator.com. Select Minwiz and then Minwiz Chat. Net control will only be taking check-ins from stations with traffic. We'll acknowledge your call and put it on the list in the order received. Remember that if for some reason you can't get in, try that chat window at hamoperator.com. Select Minwiz and Minwiz Chat. I do have one announcement for the net. August 14th. Hams in the Park has moved. It will not be in the normal place because of a conflict. So where it will be Rock Island Swing Bridge Park. That's in Inver Grove Heights. Again, that'll be August 14th. And the address, for anybody who's interested, is 4465 66th Street East, Inver Grove Heights. I repeat, 4465 66th Street East, Inver Grove Heights. That's all I've got. Anybody else with an announcement from the net, please check in now.
WB8E, Whiskey Bravo 8 Echo with an announcement.
WB8 Echo, Whiskey Bravo 8 Echo, Walt, go ahead with your announcement.
Thank you very much. Every Thursday evening, 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on room number 28298. 28298, we have a C4FM net, and it's growing quite big, a topic net. Last good hour and a half, hour 45 minutes, 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Welcome one and all. Would appreciate people checking in. It makes being net control that much worthwhile. Everybody stay safe. Back to net, WB80.
All right. Well, thank you for that. It's always good to have more events to try and check out. Anybody else with an announcement for the net, check in now. Give us your name, city, and state.
Kilo November 6, Kilo November Sierra. The name is Tuan, coming from Central California.
All right, Kilo November 6, Kilo November Sierra. Juan, go ahead with your announcement for the net.
Hiya, the name is Tuan. Actually, T-U-A-N. I just want to check in, listen in, that's all. Back to net control.
All right, well, thank you very much. Appreciate that. And with that, I'm assuming there is no more announcements, so we'll move into the check-in portion of the net. If you have a comment or a question for the net, please check in now. Give us your name, city, and state.
AK2L, David in Tucson, Arizona.
All right, Alpha Kilo 2 Lima. David, Tucson, Arizona, go ahead with your comment or question.
Hi, Chuck. Well, first, I emailed you last week about my inability to get into the net. clearly, it's working this week. This week, I'm just going through a hotspot directly to 21493. No intermediate reflector, no DB switch, bridge, etc. The question is, I've got an FDM 400, and I know that the C4FM digital mode only works on the A side. And the question's about the FTM 300, and it's not clear to me how that differs, because I thought I read something about C4FM working on both A and B sides, but I suspect that's not quite true. That's my question. Thanks.
Actually, I'm going to need some help on this one. Otis, can you pick it up for me? Whiskey 4 India Oscar Delta.
All right, Jack. Yeah, we'd be happy to see if we can help David out on that. Okay, the difference between the two radios is in relationship to VFOA and VFOB. Okay, the 400 will only do C4FM on the VFOA. B is reserved for analog APRS. The FTM 300 will do C4FM on both the A and the B, but it will only receive one at a time. So if you've got two transmitting, I think, if memory serves me correct, it is the A that takes priority. But then again, we don't have that much traffic here at the same time, so it's not an issue for me. But that is the difference between the two, just like the HTs. The FT1 would only do C4FM on VFOA, not on B. The FT2 will do it on either one. You can listen to both C4FMs on VFOA and B, as well as the FT3. So, in regards to the C4FM, that's pretty much it. I'll just throw in an additional comment. Like the 400, it will cross-band repeat, but it will not do digital to digital. It will do analog to analog. It will do C4FM to analog, but it will not do C4FM to C4FM. And in the words of N9UPC, Yaesu will not have a radio or a repeater repeat itself due to signal degradation. So I don't understand all I need to know about that one, but that's their story, and they seem to be sticking to it. So that's the story on the FTM 300. Chuck, hopefully that answers David's question, and we'll turn it back to Net Control, W4IOD. Back to you, Chuck.
Thank you, Otis. I appreciate you picking that up. And David, did that cover your question for you?
KNS, I have a question.
All right, KN6KNS, go ahead with your question.
Yes, sir. Currently, I am using a FT3D handheld. I'm just wondering if anyone out there has the cigarette lighter plug and use it with your FT3D, or I guess same thing with the FT2D. Is that just only to charge the battery, or you have to have the battery attached to the handheld, and then that's kind of like supplement or So basically, it just nothing. It just to charge the battery only, right? You cannot operate the handheld while doing that. Only when you disconnect the plug, then you can use the handheld with the battery.
All right, we're going to send that one to our battery power guru. Chris, can you take that one, K9EQ?
Okay. Happy to do that, Chuck. The answer is DC, external DC input jack on the side of the radio is what we're talking about. One of the things you can plug into it is the cigarette lighter adapter. The cigarette lighters, I think it's called an automobile DC accessory plug now. And you can use the little adapter, the cable that Yaesu sells, and plug it right in there. The only thing that Yaesu does in that cable is where the plug is, it plugs into the car, is there's a filter in there to kind of filter the DC signal. So what I'm saying applies to anybody putting 12 volts in the side of the radio, or 13.8, or, by the way, lower the better. You don't get any benefit by making it hotter and higher voltage than about 10 volts. Power from that connector will both charge and run the radio. So it'll do both. It will not charge the battery while the radio is on. So you know, the battery will only get charged when it is turned off. And it does take a little while to charge the battery. It's charging at about 500 milliamps, and it's a little over 1.5 amp hours. So, you know, you're in for several hours of charging there. It will get a little toasty when you're on 5 watts. So if you're wanting to yak on it a lot, driving around in the car, you might keep that in mind, that it does tend to get a little toasty. You know, a little external power amplifier or something like that would be the way to bring it up to snuff with what mobile radios can do. So there you go. Back to Net. This is K9EQ.
All right, Chris, thank you very much. And Otis has something to add to that. So Whiskey 4 Indy Oscar Delta, go ahead. This is Chuck Q0RK.
Yeah, Chuck, I just wanted to throw this in here because myself and John Crook, N9UPC, have had this discussion more than once. And I guess, you know, to add to my friend's Chris comment on what you're doing as far as it getting warm and what have you, it's just like the diode on the battery. I've had several friends with the FT2 that leave the battery on until it goes dead, and then all of a sudden it won't charge the battery anymore because the diode's blown and it has to make a trip back. But just to be on the safe side, it's just another option instead of using the lighter, I'm old school, Chris, yeah, the cigarette lighter adapter. Not to be politically correct, absent-minded, but I'm just too old school. But there is a battery eliminator that you can actually take the battery off that has the 13.8 receptacle in it, and it eliminates the battery and the plug altogether, and it's a little safer alternative. But just be mindful that the heat sink and that HT, like Chris says, if you're going to do a bunch of talking, is on the back of the HT. So if you've got it on high power, depending on, you know, whichever power source you're powering it with, you're going to generate quite a bit of heat because it is an HT. And that's one thing that people asked about the portable HRI setup or the PDN setup. Be mindful if you connect it to a busy room, even though it's on low power, it is an HT, and it's something that you know, I wouldn't try to do all the time, but, you know, on an intermittent basis, you should be fine because of the lack of cooling on that HT.
just wanted to add to that, and thank you, Chris, and hopefully that gives you some options. W4IOD, back to net control.
Thank you, Otis. Two really good answers there, both with lots of pieces of information that are useful. Ton, did that cover it for you, or do you need more?
Thank you very much, Mr. Otis and Chris. I see Chris is lives in, well, he lives down south from where I am, in Escondido. Just want to say hi. And, yes, thank you for a good answer. So, yeah, I did buy the battery pack, the one that you put in the AA battery. So I use that also. So, yeah, I'm just asking. Usually I prefer to charge the battery at home fully before I hit out on the road. So, of course, I bought the Yaesu, I guess called fast charger. So that takes a lot less time. It's like 5 hours instead of doing the regular plug in the straight to the handheld, and that takes 9 hours to recharge the battery. So again, thank you very much. Back to net control, KN6KNS.
All right, and just as an aside on this, if you are going to use the radio, like Otis said, as a node station, Battery America does have a battery eliminator with no battery in it, just a cigarette lighter that you can plug in, and it helps keep it cool. Just my 2 cents worth. And Tom, thank you very much for a good question, and we're looking for anybody else that has questions or comments for the net. If you do, give us your name, city, and state. Go ahead now.
K9EQ.
K9EQ, Chris, go ahead. What do you got for us tonight?
I just have a question for the net. Now, I don't have an FTM300. I've never even seen one except pictures. But I have a question, and that is they came out with a firmware update for the radio, and I know it didn't sound terribly exciting from the description. Like, you know, why would you want to install it? But at the same time, I know that, like, Yaesu saves up all the little annoying little things and things they'd like to change in the firmware, and they save them all up, and then when, you know, something worthwhile happens, they go and do an update. So you don't know everything that they changed in the radio. So I'm just curious if anybody's installed the update and if they have any impressions of it.
Well, funny that you should ask that, but our friend, Whiskey 4, India Oscar Delta, sent me a note saying he wanted to talk about that. Otis, why don't you go ahead and let us know what you found? Go ahead.
Well, it's one of those things where it's funny my friend Chris should ask that, and I think he already knew the answer. Yeah, this one got by me. Yaesu does a real good job as far as announcing some things as far as podcasts, but not so much the firmware updates. And it was actually released on the 12th, so I'm sitting here, that's 2 weeks ago, so I've been asleep, so my apologies to you and everyone on the net for not actually providing that information last week or the week before, but apparently I've been sleeping. I will say this, as far as the Fusion radios, the FTM300 is probably the easiest to do in regards to doing the firmware update as far as the dip switches and everything, easily accessible without having to pull off a rubber plug or
or a magnifying glass to, and a flashlight to get in there and see. But we went ahead and did it over the weekend. Basically, you're updating the main. You're not updating the DSP, so you got the main and sub version. I think it's 1.4.1.2. And then you, when you go to yaesu.com under the files, you've got to look for the right version. So Japan is not included, and the reason I mention this is because we have people from all over the world listening, so the Japan website is separate, and their radios are different than the rest of the world. And then I think the U.S. firmware update will pretty much cover everybody in North and South America, Australia, and New Zealand. And then the other version, the EU, I think is what it is, covers everybody else. So, but anyhow, went ahead and did that with the notes. It was fixed a bug that occasionally captured images that were not saved correctly when using the optional snapshot camera microphone, the MH85A. I have that here. I don't actually use it a whole lot. Basically, it's in the to-go box for emergency use if we need to send a picture of something. And then, as Chris is fond of saying, you've got the secret encoded other functions have been improved and optimized, so it must be a secret. Let me let the system reset. W4IOD returning. I haven't really noticed anything since I did the firmware update. The one thing that I did notice, typically on the other model radios, you have to do a backup of your memory, and then as you change the different firmware, it typically does not let you import it off the SD card without copying and paste. You have to format the card and then rewrite to the card with the new firmware on the rig. This time, I did not have to do that. I just wanted to try it and see if it would actually read the card. It did. It put the memories back where they were originally were, and the radio was all set back up again. So that part I did notice as an improvement. But as far as anything else, Chris, I have not noticed one thing. And hopefully I don't jinx myself by saying there is no screen burn-in issues in my 300, knock on wood. I know Yaesu is not publicizing that, but they are starting to see some display issues. I know Pete has some display issues and several others, but how many, who knows. Hopefully that provides Chris with some feedback, and I haven't turned this into a Dynaflow. W4IOD, back to net control.
Otis for the update on that, and Chris, did that answer your questions?
Yes, sir. Thank you for that. And as usual, my philosophy on it, well, it's nice to hear it's easier to update, so even more so, people that have the 300 should update the firmware, because you don't know what kind of sketchy things got fixed under the category that I can never remember that Otis mentioned, improved satisfaction, or whatever it is, covers a lot of things. So there might be a number of little sketchy things going on that it takes care of. So if you do have an FTM300, I would suggest updating the firmware, especially because it's so easy to do. So it looks like they got a few things right on that. Unit, I mean, three steps forward and two steps back, so we're ahead. I don't know. Back to net, K90Q.
All right, Chris, thank you very much, and we'll move on from there. If you've got a comment or a question for the net, please check in now. Name, city, and state. Go ahead.
KNZ-KNS, I have another question.
All right, Kilo November 6, Kilo November Sierra. Go ahead with your next question. Go ahead.
thank you very much. I hope it's not a silly question. So if I get the FT, I have to buy a power supply to use as a base radio. Either the, is it the 23A or the fancier looking the 30A power supply, or I guess, or it can be any other brand. Is that correct? Okay, back to net control.
Yes, it is. You basically need about 15 amps to run that radio at full power. So any power supply that will give you 20 amps will be more than enough. It does not have to be a Yaesu brand. Just has to put out enough power, and that's what you need. So, Don, there are no bad questions, because there are new people listening here every week. So there's other people that don't know what's happened in the past. So that gives us a chance to bring them up to size. All right, let's see. I just was notified that you should probably just stay with a 20 amp or better, so that you've got plenty of reserve power. So there you go, 20 amps plus, and you're set to go. Back to you, Tom.
Thank you, sir, for the answer. Yes, I'm just learning new stuff slowly by slowly. Just, I don't know if just hold up about the 300, at least try to get the general license, and then can probably even better to get the FT991A. Yeah, but that costs a lot more, like a 1,000-something. As another friend suggested to me. So, still deciding, need to study to upgrade to general license. Back to net control.
If there's pluses and minuses, and if you're not a general, there's no reason to spend the extra money on the 991 until you are. Unless that's something that you're working really hard at. But that answered the question, so let's see if anybody else has a question or a comment for the net. If you do, give us your name, city, and state. Check in now.
K90Q.
All right, K90Q. Chris, why don't you go ahead? What do you got for us this time?
Well, I've got a number of things. Maybe I'll go through them quickly here. A supply of radios. So it looks like Yaesu's doing pretty well with their supply of radios. All the usual Fusion radios seem to be in stock, except for the 991. The 991's been out of stock since February or March. So I don't know what's going on there, but the 400s, 300s, 70, and 3 are all up bumping around the local suppliers. So there you go. ICOM, they don't have any 7610s. They haven't had them for ages. You still cannot buy a D-Star HT anymore. So at least you can get Fusion HTs. No D-Star HTs. Anyway, interesting thing on the power supplies. I've been doing a little unplanned research on power supplies. I live in San Diego County, and our electric rates are the highest in the country. So I was a little curious about, you know, power supplies that run repeaters and, you know, that are on all the time, and discovered a couple of things. The first off is old data, and that is if you're running a linear power supply, how do you tell if it's a linear power supply? Pick it up. And if you have any difficulty at all picking it up due to its weight, it's a linear power supply. So you want to take those to the recycler because they are horribly inefficient and have the potential to wipe out your radio and whatever the rating is on the power supply, it's really about half of that. They give you a continuous rating. So a linear power supply, get rid of them. Switching power supplies are doing very well. You can find switching power supplies that you run on all your HF rigs and stuff like that, and noise is not a problem on a good switching power supply, so all those problems are gone. Of course, all switching power supplies are not equal. So a general rule of thumb is the larger your power supply, the more power it will draw when you're not using it. So let's say you just disconnect everything from the power supply and just turn it on. How much power will it take? A 23-amp supply will take about 5 watts. You know, a 35-amp supply will take maybe 6 or 7. 50-amp supply is, basically it goes pretty much linearly, the best I could tell. So a 50-amp supply is going to be taking about 12 or 13 watts. And that's just sitting there with it doing absolutely nothing. And so I, Otis mentioned he had a 75-watt supply, so I don't know what that's pulling. It's probably up in the 18 watts or something like that. So if you want to save power, and particularly if it's on all the time, you might be interested in that. In this case, smaller is better. And not all power supplies are created equal. My favorite power supply, Samlex, S-A-M-L-E-X, wins at having the lowest power consumption I found on the power supplies I've been testing. I don't have a wide assortment of them. I have a QJE, which is a good power supply. I'll let it stand in for an expensive Chinese power supply, which probably includes power supplies from MFJ and those guys. They just buy the modules and throw them in a box, and that's all they do. But Samlex has a line of power supplies and a whole series of stuff actually meant for radios, power supply systems for mountaintops and things like that, with redundant power and backup and charging systems. And you can get the whole works, but they also sell just your basic desktop power supply, which doesn't look like much, but I've had them running repeaters and doing all kinds of things. I've got a bunch of them at this point and never had a problem with any of them. So the Samlex did about 20% better on power consumption than the QJE did, and that's two different QJE power supplies I was testing. So, you know, like for a FTM 300 or 400, the maximum current is actually more like about 10 amps. So a 23-amp power supply is probably all that you need. If you're running an HF rig and you're like me and you have multiple radios plugged into the same power supply, you might go for like the 35-amp. But anyway, so there's a penalty for letting the thing run. So you take like 10 watts, multiply it by 8,760 hours in a year, divide by 1,000, and then you got your kilowatt hours, multiply by your rate, and there you go. For us here, it'd be about $1,000. I don't know. We run between, well, anyway, I won't go into that. Anyway, so that's the deal on power supplies. I'll end up with more data on that eventually. I found that I was kind of wondering about how that went with the power supplies. And, of course, the efficiency under load is another thing, but for the most part, our amateur radio equipment is not under load very often, so we're more interested in what the power supply consumes when it's just sitting there not doing anything. There was a discussion earlier about repeating through a mobile radio and stuff like that, and a lot of the radios, including the ASUS, can do FM repeating. But you don't see them doing digital repeating, but you do see some people saying you can repeat digital through a radio. What the story behind that is that ICOM has a series of older radios, like the 2820, I think, And what they did is they went from discriminator to modulator directly when you put it into dual band repeat. It all repeats from one band to the next. And what that will do is that will let the digital signals through, because the digital signals basically need the entire audio spectrum. Whereas normally on FM you filter below about 300 hertz, so you don't hear the PL and stuff like that. So if you're using normal FM audio, you can't repeat a digital signal, but some of these radios that go from the discriminator to the modulator without any filtering in between, they can do it. You know, a pair of 9600 baud packet radios back to back would do that also. However, that's not ideal. The reason is that as you transmit signals and they get received and stuff like that, bit errors will accumulate. We have forward error correction that can remove some of the errors, but it starts to lose steam as the number of errors increase. So the typical thing you do when you repeat a digital signal is you completely decode it, you figure out all the bits, you apply the forward error correction to put it back the way it was, and then you transmit it again. So the mobile digital repeating thing that really isn't digital, because you don't have the CPU power in there to do it. Anyway, that only works well when you have extremely strong signals and you don't contribute substantially to the bit error rate. So maybe that disambiguates some of the stuff there about these radios that can do that. And yeah, it's those old ICOM radios that you could put a D-Star module in them. They probably quit selling them about 10, 12 years ago, and they will actually do that. Anyway, back to net. This is K9EQ.
All right, Chris, thanks for the update on all of that. And, you know, that's what we're here for, is answering questions. So I'm going to make another call out there. If you've got a comment or question for the net, please check in now. Name, city, and state. All right, hearing nothing there, I'm going to make this last call for the net. Last call for the net. Give us your name, city, and state if you've got a comment or a question.
Kilo Echo 5, Mike Uniform Zulu. Name here is Eldon in Visalia, California. I have no questions for the net there, but I just kind of wanted to get checked in.
All right, good evening to you. And with that, we're going to close the net. Remember, we meet here every Monday night at 7:30 Central Time and cover all things fusion. Thanks for listening to the American Amateur Radio Society Fusion Radio Net. Please allow 1 minute for rooms that wish to disconnect before resuming use of the room. This is Chuck K04K, and we'll be clear, and everyone have a great week.
Mr. Chuck, I have another question. I hope...
Kilo November 6, Kilo November Sierra... I'll try and answer it, but I don't know, what, if nothing else, you can always ask it next Monday, too. So, go ahead, Tom.
Yes, sir. Thank you for everyone. Maybe he might know regarding about Kenwood handheld. On everybody, other people too. The how is the top of the line Kenwood handheld, the APRS feature? How is that compared with the FT3D Yaesu? And there is another question, and maybe I remember in a bit. So, yeah, so maybe, hopefully, Chris, he might know about this. Back to net control.
All right, the net is done, and I'm going to clear. I see Chris is available to take the comments, so... K04K, clear and over to K90Q. Have a fun evening, gentlemen.
Okay, 73 Chuck. Have a fun time there. Chuck's taking some time off from his onerous duties as net control. Otis is on here also, and I think Otis knows more about the Kenwood and that kind of stuff. My impression of the you know, the APRS on the YASU equipment is that it does it fine. It kind of does all the stuff you want it to do, and on the dual band radios, of which that's the only kind you can buy anymore, and the ones that have GPS on them are all dual band. You can use like the V band for the APRS and let it go running off doing its thing, and go and chat on the A band. Of course, you can't transmit on both bands at the same time. And if you're listening on, and you know, when you transmit, you'll probably either turn off or wipe out the receiver on the B band, so you know it's not perfect. But they work pretty well. I'm not a big fan of APRS because it's so inefficient and takes such huge signals to make it work. You know, to me the YASU implementation is fine. It's actually quite a bit of complexity they have in the radio to do that. That being said, Kenwood has always been, that's always been one of the things with Kenwood for years now. Their main mobile radio, whether the VX1A, you can get that with a different control head, and they call it a different radio. It's still the same radio, and it has an APRS control head, but it's a fairly expensive radio. So to me it comes down to, do you want the fusion capability? Because the Kenwood stuff is only FM. They had a D-Star HD. They're not making that anymore. I guess the other thing I would mention about Kenwood is they are not very active in the amateur radio business. It almost looks like they have a history of doing very little development. You know, the 1A or the V, I think VX, I forget what the number of it is. It's their dual band mobile. They're still selling it. That's been on the market for over 25 years. So, you know, they haven't been keeping up too well. So, I don't know. I get the feeling that, you know, they got more important things to do than amateur radio, and that they're probably not going to be around forever. At least they're not going to be very active with if they are around. So my preference would be to the YASU, and I think the YASU radios have better receivers in them than Kenwood has. But you know, the Kenwood radios are pretty durable and that kind of stuff too. So I just think the YASU receivers are more modern, since Kenwood's offerings, at least in the mobile area, are 25 years old as far as technology goes. But Otis is here, and Otis is probably more informed than I am, so I am going to send it over to Otis.
Well, I think for the most part, Chris, you've hit the nail right on the head. I will probably agree to disagree with you on a couple of things as far as Kenwood and, well, JVC is the parent company, but I agree with you on the lack of, with the exception of the TSA-90S, Kenwood has not really refined anything as far as the 990 or even the base rigs. They dropped the 480. They still have the 590 SG and the 281 as far as the mobile. The 71, I think, is what you were thinking of, the TM V71A. And I think that and the 710 are big fans of EchoLink users. And then the THD74A, that is a phenomenal radio, with the exception of one thing. It loves to eat batteries. In regards to you can't really, I would think the Kenwood, and I'll say this just generally on the filtering, you think YASU has the better? Me being the AMSAT guy, I would probably disagree with that. The Kenwood, as far as the rigs that I have HT-wise that I've worked the Oscars with the built-in TNC and the full duplex on the 72A, you're not going to beat that. It's just a phenomenal HD. But unfortunately, it's discontinued along with the 74A. And then I have the workhorse, the F6A, that I carry on my belt on a daily basis. So, Yaesu does make, and like you said, price means something too. They're not nearly as expensive as the Kenwoods. So it's all in what you want to spend and what you want to utilize them for. But general, overall, everyday use, I agree with you. For the money, it's hard to beat the Yaesu radios. Hopefully that adds to it before I time the system out. And, Chris, I'll turn it back to you and any additional comments or anything. And hopefully that helped Tuan out as far as his original question. W4IOD, go ahead, Chris.
Okay, I had a phone caller, got interrupted a little bit. Yeah, that's basically it. The reason I, well, when I'm referring to the Yaesu radios, I'm more or less talking about their mobile radios and things like that. Where the Kenwood really suffers with their older designs and stuff like that is they're very sensitive to overload. So like the 71A, V71A or whatever, you take that into a metropolitan area and it just basically shuts down. They have a something called an advanced intercept point you can turn on. Normal people call it an attenuator that applies about 10 dB of attenuation. So anyway, Juan, back to you, K9EQ.
Thank you, sir. Answering my question. And, yeah, so I remember the other question, too. You know, the handheld, the Kenwood one that I refer to is the THB-74A. That one is just, it has the, it can do the 220. It's a it also covers the tri-band and doing the D-Star. Fortunately for me, I did the research before, took the technician test, and somehow I liked the Yaesu FT3D, and as I find out later on in my area, there's only C4FM, no D-Star, so that's good for me. But I don't know, maybe you might be familiar, is the Kenwood handheld, the THB-74A, does it have a voice, a human voice when you change the select, you know, like change frequency, doing things, the setting? I could be wrong, but because I think that is, I heard from another ham person, I think he's blind, and he using the Kenwood handheld. I could be wrong, but do you know if it's true that Kenwood handheld can do the voice for that help the blind people? KN6 KNS.
Go ahead, Otis. I don't know anything about what Kenwood does.
Well, that I am well versed in because I have several friends that are visually impaired. One of them's in the club, and we actually equip the 480 that belongs to the club for field days and various portable events with a voice board. So it's an optional as far as the portable or mobile radios, HF. And then I've got one that lives in Western Kentucky. He's got a 590 with a voice board in it. So that is one of the things that we've been asked about on the net as far as Yaesu and why they don't actually work or actually try to help out visually impaired folks. And I think Chris has mentioned that before as far as contacting Yaesu, and if enough people do, they will incorporate that into their features. But JVC Kenwood seems to be the radio company that actually did that for the folks that are visually impaired. I can tell you this, on the HC, the 74A does have a voice command, and I'll keep here and let you hear a little bit of it. But basically, it's one of those things that it will not tell you what channel or what memory you're on or anything like that. But the HF radios with the voice board will announce everything. So that's one of the options that is a necessity for someone that is blind. Chris, appreciate you letting me get in there, and I'm going to go ahead and clear it because it is getting late, and I still have a repeater linked in the room. But Twan, we invite you back next Monday evening. You can stay there and carry on with Chris as long as you like. I know you guys are on the West Coast, but for me, it's getting a little late. So, Chris, I'm going to pass it back to you for any additional comments. And Twan, appreciate the questions and your enthusiasm and asking them, and us being here to being able to provide you with some sort of answer, whether it's wrong, right, or indifferent. K9U, and I believe what was Twan's call? KN6KNS, I believe. W4IOD, I'll say good evening, gentlemen, and you all stay safe. Go ahead, Chris, pick it up.
Okay, 73OD. Oh, this is over on the eastern time zone. And he has to get up in the morning at dark 30, so. And he's probably already had a really busy day. So, yeah, Juan and I, we bump into each other on the SoCal Ham network. He's up, I think Juan is up near Bakersfield. Anyway. I better get going here too, Juan, but glad to have you stop by and ask your questions, and hope we hear you here next week. So very good. And then, yeah, there Otis just signed off the net control stations here. I have a little deal that we do where we communicate online here. Anyway, KN6, KNS, back to you, K9EQ.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chris, and also same thing to Otis. So, I I see that you also monitor SoCal repeater? So maybe you have heard me before. So, thank you for the help so far. Hopefully I will get a chance to talk with you more later on. Yeah, this wonderful net meeting, just learning about C4FM and YX and the feature on the handheld. So, I guess on the oldest time zone is before us. Still 6:30 in the afternoon for us. So, again, thank you, Chris. Back to you, KN6KNS.
Oh, okay, very good one. I'll tell you, so it looks like you got your license almost a year ago in August of 2020. You're wondering how I knew that. I'm looking at you on QRZ.com, and you need to get you over there one of these days and get signed up. And people basically use QRZ to look up other hams and things like that. So it has the FCC supplied data, so there you go. Everybody signed up on QRZ, so QRZ.com, and you just type in your call sign and get signed up, and you can enter some information about yourself, a biography. 417 people. Well, you have been on there, because you've got your email address on there. Okay, you got 417 people that looked you up. Well, stick something in there for the biography so we know a little bit about you. Anyway, just giving you a bad time, fun.
nice chatting with you. And the SoCal Ham, Ellie Repeater, the repeater here in Escondido, normally sits over there. So, I monitor it, whenever I can. But anyway, 873. We'll catch you later. I got a bug. K90Q.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chris. Yeah, I go to the SoCal Ham website. That's a nice website. They tell you like who log on to the system. So, yeah, that's a nice setup they have there on the